Taking Aim with
Ralph Schoenman
and Maya Schoen, coming to you Tuesday, March 22nd, 2005. Avian flu, candidate for terror weapon. This was the headline of the Globe and Mail in Canada on March 8th, 2005. An article by Helen Bramswell. The military's intelligence arm has warned the federal government, that's the Canadian federal government, that avian influenza could be used as a weapon of bioterrorism, a heavily censored report suggests. The report entitled Recent Human Outbreaks of Avian Influenza and Potential Biological Warfare Implications was obtained by the Access to Information Act by the Canadian Press. It was prepared by the J2 Directorate of Strategic Intelligence, a secretive branch of the Canadian National Defense, which produces intelligence reports for the government. The report outlines in broad terms the methods that would be used to develop a man-made strain of avian flu influenza that is capable of triggering a human flu pandemic. Capable of triggering a human flu pandemic. This is part two of creating the next pandemic. In part one, we discussed how the World Health Organization and the Center for Disease Control predict that within the next 10 months, there will be a massive pandemic throughout the world of the avian flu influenza. And they bring to mind the 1918 to 1919 Spanish flu influenza, called Spanish flu because of reporting in Spain of the influenza, which swept throughout the world. And 1 billion people, more than half of the world's population at the time, was stricken with the flu, and 40 to 50 million people died. Today, with the avian flu influenza, the reports are that 72 to 76%, almost three-quarters of the people who contract the avian flu influenza, die. And it's a horrible death. And this is what the World Health Organization and the Center for Disease Control and now the Canadians also report is available to us, is on the timeline. December 8th, 2004, this military report suggests that the avian influenza will be a topic of bioterrorism. Ralph.
Well, Maya, the report that the Toronto Globe and Mail refers to is entitled Recent Human Outbreaks of Avian Influenza and Potential Biowarfare Implications. It was obtained by the Access to Information Act by the Canadian Press. This study and this program was prepared by the J2 Directorate of Strategic Intelligence, a secretive branch of the National Defense, reports the Toronto Globe and Mail, charged with producing intelligence for the government. The report outlines, the Globe and Mail tells us, in broad terms, the methods that can be used to develop a man-made strain of influenza capable of triggering a human flu pandemic. Such forced antigenic shifts will be attempted in a biological weapons program, states the 15-page report. The repeated cycling of strains of a virus through generations of species of animals and through cell culture, a process used to ratchet up the virulence of a virus, and that is a weaponized plan. Influenza will make, quote, a good bioterrorism agent. Once released, the virus will not discriminate. The ultimate goal is panic, social disruption, and economic loss, confirmed Dr. Brian Ward, a virologist at McGill University in Montreal. We have here a direct confirmation of a government program designed to create the pandemic that they are predicting the world over. And they are estimating the health costs to be in the realm of $24 billion. Those $24 billion will be harvested by the makers of vaccines, the pharmaceutical companies, and the governments that induce the condition.
Now, that's just the cost to Canada, Ralph, the $24 billion. You have to spread that throughout the world of what it would take in terms of the flu vaccine and the other vaccines that they would, the current flu vaccine, the Tamiflu, which is used to treat flu, and the other vaccines that they would create. What's interesting about this is something that we discussed in part one, the research of Dr. Yoshihiro Kawaoka at the University of Wisconsin-Madison, and he worked with Canadian scientists, it should be noted. The experiments were first done in Canada, and then they moved the research back to the University of Wisconsin School of Veterinary Medicine. Now, as a virologist, what Dr. Kawaoka discovered is that it only took a slight genetic tweak. That was all that was required to transform a mild strain of the flu virus into something that was far more pathogenic and more transmissible. Note that what the Canadian Defense Department is talking about is exactly what is going on in laboratories in the United States, creating highly transmissible, highly virulent flus. This is bioterrorism at its core.
The report, Maya, describes, quote, a pandemic strain engineered in a laboratory using reverse genetics, a technically challenging process that will allow scientists to custom tailor the flu virus, taking genes from a virulent but not highly transmissible strain and melding them with genes from a virus that transmits well from person to person. This is a technique scientists have been using to decipher how the virus that caused the Spanish flu of 1918 to 1919 was so deadly. And the pandemic, which they have claimed, report states, of 50 million lives worldwide, the worst known in history, can be replicated. This is almost a Mein Kampf and defining document establishing the intent to take these viruses and mutate them to a point where they can be passed without inhibition from human to human, inducing the pandemic.
Now, we've discussed here work that went on in Wisconsin and in Canada and is reported by the Canadian Defense Intelligence about the possibility of bioterrorism when the bioterrorism is actually, the weapons are being created now by the very defense departments. According to physicians who wrote in the Journal of the Royal Society of Medicine in Great Britain, they too warned also that the influenza virus would be a possible bioterrorism weapon. So here we have, throughout Canada and Great Britain, the warnings of this bioterrorism weapon, and yet the very research to create these weapons is being done in these countries. In the Journal of the Royal Society of Medicine, it was a report by physicians who are affiliated with the University of Texas Houston Health Center and two heart institutes in Houston. Dr. Mohammed Majid reports, the possibility for genetic engineering and aerosol transmission suggests an enormous potential for bioterrorism. The sequencing of the genome of the 1918 Spanish influenza virus is nearly complete. Once it is published, unscrupulous scientists could presumably utilize candidate virulence sequence. In fact, these sequences are already completed and they are being used in the laboratories now as we speak.
In fact, Maya, this report that is cited by the Center for Infectious and Infectious Disease Control and Prevention describes a biological weapon influenza that has several advantages over smallpox. Genetic engineering and aerial transmission will provide enormous potential, they assert. We must consider the possibility of genetic engineering to create more virulent strains of the influenza, sequencing of the genome of the 1918 Spanish influenza virus is now nearly complete, and scientists can utilize candidate virulence sequences. There is no question as to what is being discussed here. Influenza virus is far more accessible than smallpox virus, known stocks of which are held only in secure facilities in the United States and Russia, the authors note, and thus influenza has other advantages over smallpox as a potential weapon. Center for Infectious Disease Control and Prevention. And indeed, here is CNN. U.S. to test bird flu vaccine. U.S. government is getting ready to test the bird flu vaccine, preparing to stockpile both vaccine and antiviral drugs as the threat grows that a deadly strain of avian influenza will begin spreading. 2 million doses of vaccine are being stored in bulk form to test whether it retains its potency. So what are we describing here? On the one hand, they're inducing and producing the virus and experimenting on how to get it to a point where it cannot be stopped and may be spread rapidly. On the other, they're preparing for vaccines that they're going to impose at great profit. Simultaneous operation.
Ralph, the contract has already been awarded to Aventis. Aventis is a combination of two companies, Rome Poulenc and Hirst, a German company and a French company, and they were given $13 million by the Department of Health and Human Services to Aventis Pasteur to make 2 million doses of the vaccine to protect supposedly against the H5N1. But as you mentioned, they have to test this, and they're going to use human guinea pigs. Now, this $13 million comes down to $6.50 a dose, and it's being manufactured in Swiftwater, Pennsylvania, at a new Aventis Pasteur's facility there. The seed virus is a weakened version of the wild-type virus, they state, and will be tested extensively. That means tested on in clinical trials on unsuspecting human beings here in the United States, and that usually is the prison population or the poor. Chiron, which is the company that had reached public note because of the defective flu vaccine that they had produced, Chiron is producing 40,000 doses of another a vaccine for another virus, the H9N2, and they are going to have clinical trials. So we see already that not only is there experimentation with the H5N1 virus, they are also experimenting with another avian flu virus, the H9N2. And this is the virus that infected people in Hong Kong in 1999 and 2003, and which again the CDC and the Department of Health here in the United States expects will transform and spark a pandemic. Well, spark a pandemic? You mean they will create this pandemic.
Yuri Dubenko makes a report on this very subject on March 13, 2005. U.S. bioterrorists create genetic engineering virus. Designer viruses for biological warfare got a boost with the latest man-made disease created by Mark Bueller of the University of St. Louis. His government finance team has deliberately produced an extremely lethal form of mouse pox, relative of the smallpox virus, one of the most deadly viruses on Earth, financed by the government and the National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Disease. The research project is going to devise a pox which will kill one in three victims. The genetically altered mouse pox virus kills all mice, even if they have been given antiviral drugs and a vaccine. In addition, the cowpox virus, which infects humans, has been genetically manipulated, according to Butler. New Scientist and Ian Ramshaw of the Australian National University have reported, "We have great concerns about what they are doing with this pox virus that can cross species." Ramshaw was a member of a team that discovered how to make mousepox more deadly. Report in the New Scientist on January 13, 2001. Ramshaw's team made an initial discovery while developing contraceptive vaccines for sterilizing mice and rabbits, writes New Scientist. The researchers then modified the mousepox virus by adding a gene for a natural immunosuppressant called IL-4. The modified mousepox virus is far more lethal, killing 60% of the vaccinated mice. The addition IL-4 switches off a key part of the immune system called the cell-mediated response. The conclusion is startling when considered in the event of species-jumping man-made viruses. Bueller has engineered a mousepox strain that kills 100% of vaccinated mice even when they are treated with the viral drug, Cetofovir. And so, the documentation continues. The bottom line, the report states, is that biotech and biowarfare are sponsored by the government and commercial interests. The weapon systems remain one of the most lucrative in the world. It was the United States under George Herbert Walker Bush who sold Saddam Hussein biological and biochemical weapons to devise them and develop them for use in Iraq. And the article continues that this has been generalized and is prepared for many countries at this very moment.
Ralph, now that you mentioned Dybenko, I think it's also important to return to an article that was written at the height of the SARS, what was supposed to be a large epidemic, and they expected to be a pandemic. On April 17, 2003, Dr. Mae Wan Ho wrote an important article called Bioterrorism and SARS, in which she states how the SARS could have been created in the lab and goes into the genetic engineering of superviruses, just as Dybenko describes with the mousepox and what we described before with creating the virulent, much more virulent, avian flu virus. She writes of SARS. The SARS coronavirus was atypical. It rapidly infected cells in culture dishes, something other than human coronaviruses do not do. Something that other human coronaviruses do not do. Viruses from the lung tissue in the Toronto, Canada patients readily infected monkey kidney cells, and no known human coronavirus infects that cell line. She notes that the new virus, as reported in the New England Journal of Medicine, in the new results that were done on the virus testing showed that the new virus is not closely related to any known virus at all. Human, mouse, bovine, cat, pig, bird, notwithstanding. Furthermore, the virus was isolated from cell cultures only and not from the tissues of patients. Dr. Mae Wan Ho then describes how you could genetically engineer a supervirus such as the SARS virus that was sweeping throughout Asia and ended up in Canada too. While the epidemic is still to run its course, a report appeared in the Journal of Virology describing a method for introducing desired mutations into coronavirus in order to create new viruses. A key feature of the procedure, she writes, is to make interspecific chimera recombinant viruses. It involves replacing part of the spike protein gene in the feline, that is cat, infectious peritonitis virus, that's FIPV, which causes invariably fatal infections in cats. And you mix it, that is, you recombine it, with that of the mouse hepatitis virus. The recombinant MFIPV will no longer infect cat cells, but will infect the mouse cells instead and multiply rapidly in them. Now, this scientific explanation tells you that what they can do is they take lines of the genes of the various cells and they mix them. What could be safe in one animal, if you take that line and you mix it with and you inject it into another animal, it becomes fatal, and it recombines together to create something quite different, which can transmit throughout the species rapidly. Ralph.
Well, Maya, the extraordinary report by Dr. May Van Ho is very explicit. Experiments in manipulating viral genomes are now routine in these government laboratories. They create new viruses that jump host species in the laboratory. It is not even necessary now for them to create the lethal viruses. It is faster and more effective to let random recombination and mutation take place in their test tubes. Using a technique called molecular breathing, see death by DNA shuffling, millions of recombinants are being generated in a matter of minutes. They screen them for improved function in the case of enzymes and increased virulence in the case of viruses and bacteria. In other words, these government geneticists are greatly speeding up evolution in the laboratory to create viruses and bacteria that have never existed in all the billions of years of evolution on Earth. These are government, weaponized, genuinely and generally created viral weapons. The pandemic is an induced undertaking.
And in April of 2004, two of nine cases of SARS, which reappeared in China, and particularly in Anhui province, were the direct result, according to the World Health Organization, of the lack of what they call the lack of biosafety procedures at the National Institute of Virology in Beijing. What we have to ask is, were they the result of lack of biosafety procedures, or were they the intentional distribution of the SARS outbreak?
Well, to return, Maya, to what we had discussed in the prior program, the article in the Bulletin of Atomic Scientists on mixing bugs and bombs, they talk about the agencies that have been obtaining funds for the development of dangerous bioagents: the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, the National Institute of Health, the National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Disease, the Department of Agriculture, the Environmental Protection Agency, the Food and Drug Administration, the Defense Department, the Energy Department's National Nuclear Security Administration, and the Department of Homeland Security, quoting the Bulletin of Atomic Scientists. These defense operations have popped up in over a dozen states. Non-governmental organizations note that construction has been put on the fast track. There has been no overall review of the environmental risks of these new biolabs for the workers who work in them. But leaving that issue aside, what we are witnessing here is an explosion of governmental bioweapon operations that are making a growth industry out of biowarfare. Energy's biowarfare bid, global consequences, a chemical and biological national security program that has escalated, that is receiving growing funds, and that is part of a plan to weaponize these viruses.
We're up to talking about at least 30 expanded or new labs across the United States with over 9,000 employees and 300 scientists and technicians, but this doesn't take into account, mind you, because these are specific labs, this doesn't take into account the research that goes on in the schools of veterinary medicine and in the other colleges and universities throughout the United States. And let's look at some of the life-threatening microorganisms that they work with: anthrax, bubonic plague, and Ebola, Marburg. These are incredible viruses, and now the avian flu. The avian flu virus that they say could infect at least half of the population of the world, over 3 billion people. And this is what they're playing with in their laboratories?
They're not playing, Maya. The San Francisco Chronicle reports on March 13th, John Bolton, who President Bush nominated last week as the new U.S. ambassador to the United Nations, is remembered here as the man President Bush sent in the first year of his first administration to kill the Biological Weapons Treaty, a man who accomplished the task with a truculence that made a very lasting and negative impression, the Chronicle reports. It explains why observers of the international scene respond to his appointment with a shudder. By 1995, there was a review conference for signatory countries of the 1975 Biological Weapons Convention, which the United States had ratified. Its purpose was to assess the state of the matters dealt with in the treaty and to discuss amendments to it in view of advances in biological research. The conclusion of the conference was that the treaty needed an enforcement mechanism. In fact, the U.S. delegation gave little indication that there was any intention for the United States to allow this control mechanism to go into effect. The new Bush administration sent a delegation headed by Bolton, who declared that the United States was, quote, withdrawing the support for any enforcement protocol, unquote. The United States, the Chronicle tells us, had the largest biodefense weapons program in history. There is a fine line between defensive and offensive. Most observers and scientists are convinced that the United States is about to cross that line. The United States has refused to guarantee compliance with the treaty, and that has scuttled it. Bolton proposed that the protocol be, quote, simply dumped. The Chronicle tells us he has proposed treaties that are bilateral between the United States and any other country in the world, with the United States having the sole power to enforce, including the right to extradite and try in U.S. courts, anyone accused of engaging in bioweapons research somewhere else. In short, nothing, the Chronicle tells us, will disturb the United States as it crosses the line into research for offensive biological weapons. But the United States is seeking a system answerable to nobody that will empower it to bring its full force, including military, to bear on any country attempting to compete with it in bioweaponry research and development. So what we have here is a clear and abiding demonstration that this is a full-scale policy that is being implemented across the board. This prediction of pandemic, this constant orchestration of the inevitability of a human pandemic, flows from the weaponization of the very viruses that are ascribed to as the agents for the pandemic to come. Quote, the Bioweapons Treaty is a dead letter. The bioarms race is on in the United States, and many are now quietly asking what the real origin of the avian bird flu may be. San Francisco Chronicle, the report by Robert James Parsons on Sunday, March 13th, 2005.
Ralph, to return to the article in the Bulletin of Atomic Scientists, Mixing Bugs and Bombs, of October 2003, they say that the Energy Department has given Los Alamos and Livermore carte blanche for select agents to work with, and they note, quote, that the department says, quote, select agents have historically been associated with weaponizing efforts, end quote. This is right in line with what you were talking about with Bolton and the bioterrorism treaties. Note, approximately 40 viruses, bacteria, rickettsia, fungi, and toxins are listed by the CDC. Some of these are known to our listeners: anthrax, tularemia, plague, Q fever, botulism, brucellosis, tuberculosis, staphylococcus, salmonella bacteria, hepatitis, HIV, herpes, hantavirus, which is spread through mouse droppings, and influenza virus. Again, note the influenza virus. It is not just in these little science labs, they're extensive science labs, but here we have at the nuclear facilities, Los Alamos and Livermore, the experimentation that is going to go on with influenza virus. We suggest you look at this article, Mixing Bugs and Bombs, by Mary Leah Kelly and Jay Coughlin, September-October 2003, Bulletin of Atomic Scientists. Now, this has been going on for a long time, and there are many wonderful books written about the bioterrorism experiments conducted by the United States, which supposedly were canceled during the Nixon administration for offensive, and then they were just called defensive. If you look at the chain of command, you will see, just as with the Bolton reporting, this has never stopped. The U.S. has been a major promoter of bioterrorism research, creating all these bioterrorism mechanisms, these viruses, the diseases, and as we have documented in many Taking Aim programs, using these agents throughout the world in Afghanistan and in Iraq. In 1982, Jonathan King, a molecular biologist at the Massachusetts Institute of Technology, was one of the first people to address the issue of genetic engineering and the military. And Leonard Cole speaks of this in his excellent book, Clouds of Secrecy, to which Ralph refers over and again. At a symposium at the American Association for the Advancement of Science, he produced an article called The Threat of Biological Weapons. And he spoke of the use of anthrax in Sverdlovsk in 1979 and the yellow rain that was being used in Afghanistan and Southeast Asia. What was noted by King is that the U.S. Army incorporated already recombinant DNA research into its program. In 1980, the Army was bold enough to advertise in Science magazine for proposals on the introduction of recombinant DNA methods for the human nervous system gene of acetylcholinesterase from human neuroblastoma cells into a bacterium. The purpose of the research is to obtain a microorganism that synthesizes the human enzyme so that it can be isolated for biochemical, neurochemical, and pharmacological purposes. And the proposals were sent to none other than the U.S. Army Research and Development Command, that's the U.S. AMRID at Fort Detrick, Maryland.
Well, Maya, Leonard Cole is the author of Clouds of Secrecy, The Army's Germ Warfare Tests Over Populated Areas. He is professor of political science and public policy at Rutgers University, and he has documented for 40 years the use of biological agents on the civilian population of the United States in over 318 sites across the United States, as the New York Times has affirmed. The subway system of New York, the school systems of Minneapolis and St. Louis.
We pause now for station ID and we'll return with more about Leonard Cole.
Hi, I'm Saad Masih. Masa al khair, Ana Saad Masih. Thank you for listening to WBAI. Bonsoir tout le monde, vous êtes à l'écoute de WBAI.
Ralph Schoenman
and Maya Schoen, our program today, part two of Creating the Next Pandemic. Ralph.
Well, Maya, I think it's important for us to emphasize that Leonard Cole documents that the tens of millions of Americans affected in the United States by the biological and bacteriological and germ warfare program of the United States government and Department of Defense over a period of 40 years have been continuous. It is a little extension to apply this to the world, and any pandemic of which they speak is of their own creation. Let that be clear. In the Bay Area, after the introduction of trillions of bacilli involving spinal and brain meningitis, there was a tenfold increase in brain and spinal meningitis in the Bay Area. and over 10 million Americans were affected across the United States by the bacilli, trillions of spores that were released by the U.S. Department of Defense. And indeed, Leonard Cole had a follow-up book called The 11th Plague, The Politics of Biological and Chemical Warfare. And in The 11th Plague, he documents that, in fact, the mutating of viral forms is part of a continuing biowarfare program of the United States authorities. The 11th Plague is a prediction and a projection of precisely the pandemic that is under discussion as we speak.
Ralph, you spoke before about the mouse pox that had been created. It was genetically modified mouse pox virus that created a highly virulent strain that could not be stopped by vaccination. And this was done 4 years ago by scientists in Australia. Today, we have to note, January 22, 2005, a few months ago, an article that appeared in The Independent in Great Britain, outcry over the creation of a genetically modified smallpox virus. Senior scientific advisors to the World Health Organization recommended the creation of a genetically modified version of smallpox, and they said it was to counter any threat of a bioterrorist attack. Now, remember that when they were genetically modifying the mousepox virus, what was created, in fact, was a highly virulent strain, as I mentioned before, that couldn't be stopped by vaccination. And here we have the World Health Organization, which is telling the scientists to go do this very same thing with the smallpox virus. Professor Donald Henderson of the Center for Biosecurity at the University of Pittsburgh, who is one of the foremost scientists who worked on smallpox, said he feared that tinkering with the genetic makeup of the variola virus, which causes smallpox, might accidentally produce a more lethal form of the disease. What we have to note is that with the World Health Organization and the work that goes on by the armed forces in the United States, that it wouldn't be inadvertent that the genetic modification of the variola virus, that it would be intentional to create a more virulent form of smallpox so that the hundreds of millions of doses of smallpox vaccine that is still in storage, even though smallpox has been eradicated, all these vaccines would be useless should a genetically modified version of smallpox be created in a laboratory. Now, if the World Health Organization is recommending the creation of this version of variola, we must anticipate that it is already being done in the Defense Department laboratories.
Yes, Maya, well, the work of Leonard Cole, both in Clouds of Secrecy and 11th Plague, is absolutely explicit about this. The Army, U.S. Army, he states, has incorporated recombinant DNA work into its program. By recombinant DNA methods of the human nervous system gene of acetylchlorinesterase from human neuroblastoma cells into bacteria, they are obtaining microorganisms which synthesize the human enzyme so they may be isolated for biochemical, neurochemical, and pharmacological work. This is under the U.S. Army Research and Development Command at Fort Detrick, Maryland, and they demonstrate that the biological warfare program includes the manufacturing of the enzyme acetylchlorinesterase, essential to the transmission of nerve impulses and nerve gases. The DNA is recombinant DNA is prepared for other toxin research, creating toxins through genetic engineering technology and introducing the gene for pneumococcus toxins into E. coli. This is the kind of experimentation that is inducing an expanded program for recombinant DNA work. This is for military purposes. It has been done years ago. It has nothing to do with defense. And in fact, as he describes this, He states, quoting Sheldon Krimsky, a social scientist at Tufts University, "There are no assurances that this rDNA technology is not being used by the Department of Defense to produce new biological weapons. There is no distinction between offensive and defensive biological weapons. It doesn't make any sense to speak about defensive biological weapons. They are always offensive."
Now, this was noted, Ralph, by 700 scientists in the United States. Not every scientist is going along with this game plan. And it included two Nobel laureates. The New York Times reported March 1st of this year that 700 scientists signed a petition against the United States government's emphasis on so-called biodefense, with $1.5 billion being spent on this research on so-called bioterrorist threats. The scientists say that money is being funneled away from research on common diseases. And let's look at the shifts that are taking place. Diseases such as tuberculosis and syphilis, should be studied still, according to the scientists. And the and this is a very important petition, and one that should be recognized by activists throughout the country. Because what you see with the shifting of the millions of dollars in federal research money, it's away from the pathogens that cause major public health problems to what the scientists call obscure germs. But in fact, these are not obscure germs. These are creating virulent forms of viruses and other germ diseases that could create mass pandemics and attacks against peoples of the world.
Maya, the 11th plague is very explicit here. The biological warfare programs during the 1950s and 1960s that sprayed much of the United States with bacteria and chemical materials were rehearsals for even more lethal agents and created risks and illness for millions of citizens in the United States who were exposed unwittingly to the Army's agents. And current U.S. biological and chemical activities have been thereby shadowed by the earlier program imposed on the United States citizenry without their knowledge and with devastating effect. The public, he states, has reason to worry not only about the biological and chemical weapons in other parts of the world, but the programs at home that have developed them and used them. And he states the Chemical Weapons Convention, failure of the United States Senate to act to in any way slow this momentum is related to the fact that these programs are being carried out by the United States government, both at home and abroad. In fact, we have here now a particular report on bird flu SARS, biowarfare weapon of a pandemic. This is a report by Sepp Hasselberger on March 2, 2005. Are we being stampeded into a pandemic? The announcement made by Dr. Nancy Cox of the U.S. Centers for Disease Control that a global epidemic of bird flu will dwarf history's worst infection disaster, which killed 40 to 50 million people. In fact, Hasselberger reports, these are programs that are being developed at the Centers for Disease Control at government laboratories in the United States, where the recombinant DNA and the viral agents are being mutated precisely to create the very condition of which they are warning. Right now, he states, 50 people representing drug companies, governments, and vaccine licensing agents are meeting in Geneva in a closed-door session to discuss the coming flu pandemic. The World Health Organization is stating there will not be enough vaccine to go around. They say, quote, production capacity for the pandemic vaccine will be vastly inadequate. Unless other companies engage in vaccine seed development, in the event of the pandemic, vaccine will be in short supply and will be unequally distributed. So what they are preparing us for is a panic, a pandemic, a vaccine that will create quarantine, profiteering, chaos, and control, while economic and political objectives are imposed under the aegis of martial rule.
Ralph, but what we've seen with the scientists stating explicitly with regard to, let's say, smallpox, which was eradicated in 1977, yet the United States still has stored 250 million doses of smallpox vaccine in case it's used as a bioterrorism weapon, and yet what we have is the World Health Organization talking about creating a more virulent new form of smallpox, and this vaccine would be useless. You discovered an article that I think we should look at, even though it's not dealing with viruses. It refers to something similar to something we discussed last July, the People Zapper. And on March 5th, 2005, in the Independent again, in the United Kingdom, an article, "Pentagon Gun Will Inflict Pain from Mile Away," was published by their reporter Andrew Buncombe in Washington. And he's referring to the Pentagon spending hundreds of thousands of dollars to develop a new energy pulse weapon that can deliver a jolt of excruciating pain from more than a mile away. Now, this pulse weapon, it's a laser pulse, is very similar to the People Zapper that we discussed in a prior show. But what's interesting in this article, and we'll return more to the energy pulse weapon, is that researchers expressed outrage that work that was originally done to help relieve pain was being used to produce the weapon. Andrew Rice, a consultant in pain medicine at Chelsea and Westminster Hospital in London, told New Scientist magazine, quote, "Even if the use of severe pain could be justified as a restraining measure, which he doesn't believe it can, the long-term physical and psychological effects are unknown." And Andrew Rice, as many of the scientists who worked on pain, the issues of pain, and then saw their research turned over to the Office of Naval Research and University of Florida in Gainesville, which is developing this laser pulse weapon, what they saw is work that they thought was for the betterment of humankind is being used by the military for the destruction of humankind.
Yes, Maya. Well, this report about the Pentagon gun that will inflict pain from a mile away is very closely related to the bioweapons research itself. Now, just to continue with what it really is, it's a pulsed energy projectile which fires a laser pulse that in turn generates a burst of expanding plasma. When it hits anything solid, it causes paralysis, it knocks people off their feet, and it reveals that the Sunshine Project reveals that the same technology can be used to kill. The contract between the Office of Naval Research and the University of Florida in Gainesville, where the research was done, is headlined "Sensory Consequences of Electromagnetic Pulse Emitted by Laser-Induced Plasma. Each system has lethal capacities. Our research will examine the feasibility of PEP as a new generation weapon." And a new scientist elaborates on this on March 2, 2005. "The U.S. military is funding development of a weapon that delivers a bout of excruciating pain from up to 2 kilometers away for use against rioters. That is to say, the civilian population in the United States, protesters, those who oppose government policy. And, quote, they fear the technology will be used for torture." And indeed, the research, which came to light in documents unearthed by the Sunshine Project, exposes biological weapons research, and that's the link. This is a research contract that's involving not only the pulsed energy projectiles, but bioweapons research. So the biological weapons research that is related to the production of epidemics and pandemics and the modification of flu virus and the creation of mass death is also being deployed against the civilian population with pain control mechanisms. And indeed, that leads us, Maya, to the fate of those scientists who have been induced to work on these programs, often on a need-to-know basis. As you indicate, the scientists who were asked to work on the weapon, the pain-producing weapon, were under the impression that their work was designed to control pain, not to devise a weapon which could expand it and impose it and inflict it. And that leads us to the following. The very mysterious deaths of five microbiologists, the report by Ian Gurney. It is a story worthy of a major conspiracy theory. The script for Mel Gibson whodunit, or a blueprint for an episode of The X-Files, except that the facts surrounding this story are just that, facts. Five eminent microbiologists, leaders in their fields of scientific research, have been found dead or are missing in the last 8 weeks, and a bizarre connection between the dead scientists and the surrounding and the mystery surrounding the death by anthrax inhalation of hospital workers in New York. Over the past week, several world-acclaimed scientific researchers specializing in infectious diseases and biological agents such as anthrax and DNA sequencing have been found dead or have gone missing. On November 12th, Dr. Benito Key, a cell biologist working on infectious diseases like HIV, was found dead outside his laboratory in the Miami Medical School. The incident, whatever it may have been, occurred on Monday afternoon as the scientist left his job at the University of Miami School of Medicine. The word among his friends is that four men armed with a baseball bat attacked him at his car. Within 1 week of Dr. Key's assault, Dr. Don C. Wiley, one of the United States' foremost infectious disease researchers, was declared missing. Bill Poovey, the journalist with Associated Press, writes, his rental car was found with a full tank of petrol and the keys in the ignition. His disappearance looked like a suicide, but according to colleagues in Dr. Wiley's family, the Harvard scientist associated with the Howard Hughes Medical Institute would never have committed suicide. Associates who attended the St. Jude's Children Research Advisory Dinner with Dr. Wiley hours before stated he was in good spirits. He had never been depressed. He was seen at the banquet at the Peabody Hotel in downtown Memphis the night he vanished. Those who saw him last say he showed no signs of a man contemplating his death. He left the hotel around midnight. The bridge where his car was found is a five-minute drive away in the wrong direction from where he was staying, leaving authorities with a four-hour unexplained gap until his vehicle was found. Dr. Wiley was an expert on how the human immune system can fight off infections and was investigating dangerous viruses such as AIDS, Ebola, herpes, and influenza. From the United States, the story moves to England. On November 23rd, Dr. Vladimir Pasechnik, the microbiologist for Biopreparat, the Soviet biological weapons production facility, was found dead. The Times is the only newspaper to provide an obituary for Dr. Pasechnik. The defection to Britain in 1989 of Vladimir Pasechnik revealed to the West a colossal clandestine biological warfare program. He was immediately incorporated in biological agent preparations such as anthrax, plague, tularemia, and smallpox. After his defection, he worked for 10 years at the United Kingdom's Department for Applied Microbiology Research and then formed his own company, Regma Biotechnics. In the last few weeks of his life, his research on anthrax was placed at the disposal of the government. Back in the United States, Dr. Robert M. Schwartz was found murdered in Leesburg, Virginia. The well-known DNA sequencing researcher had founded the Virginia Biotechnology Association, where he was working on DNA sequencing for 15 years. On December 12th, the Washington Post reports, a well-known biophysicist, one of the leading researchers on DNA sequencing analysis, is found slain in his rural Loudoun County home after co-workers became concerned when he didn't arrive, a founding member of the Biotechnology Association. Loudoun Sheriff stated that Schwartz had been stabbed. On December 14th, a skilled microbiologist at Victoria State, Australia, killed at the Commonwealth Scientific and Industrial Research Organization. Similar work. Australian scientists Dr. Ron Jackson, Dr. Ian Ramshaw, who were engaged in promoting a virulent, an astonishingly virulent strain of mouse pox, a cousin of smallpox among laboratory mouse. They realized that the similar genetic manipulation was carried on, out on smallpox, an unstoppable killer. The microbiologist had worked for 15 years at the facility, found dead. Then there is Seth Van Gien, who appeared to have died after entering an airlock in a storage laboratory filled with nitrogen. Again, working on similar projects. What we are witnessing here, and there are more microbiologists to cite, is the disappearance and the murder of those who have been working on these government programs. We cannot state what they were prepared to reveal, whether they were considered unreliable, whether they were having doubts about the uses of their work. But what we do know is that they are dying like flies. Maya.
In the beginning of this year, Dr. Julie Gerberding stated that a pandemic is inevitable and they predict it will take place within 10 months. We're seeing a highly pathogenic strain of influenza virus emerge, to which an extraordinary proportion across the entire western component of Asia. And you will see this strain develop, mutate, to which the human population has no immunity. On Taking Aim, Parts 1 and 2, we discussed creating the next pandemic. While they ask, if not, but when, we state that it is the United States government that is precipitating, is causing, is creating the next pandemic.
As indeed, Maya, has been the case over the past 100 years. There has been a continuous program of biological research on weapons that are used against civilian populations. Creating the pandemic is but the continuation of a criminalized government whose enemy is our own people and the peoples of the world.
You are listening to Taking Aim with
Ralph Shonen
and Maya Shone. Our program, Creating the Pandemic, Part 2, will be on our website, www.takingaim.info. You can reach us at Taking Aim at PacBell, that's PACBELL.net, or Taking Aim at WBAI.org. Cassettes and CDs of these programs are also available. We'll be with you next week.
Right here.